Good morning. Welcome to the WAMC panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a wonderful selection of individuals to talk to this morning, including yourselves, of course. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Welcome back, Joe. We missed you yesterday.
Well, it was only a day.
Well, it seemed like a week. Or more.
Yeah. Jesus. Oddly enough, they say the same thing when I'm here. Isn't that odd? Newsman Ray Graff. Good morning, Ray. Thank you for filling in yesterday. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
That sounded dubious.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was a pleasure, but thank you for talking about the ballet. And Daily Freeman publisher emeritus, Ira Fussfeld.
Very nice to see you guys.
It is wonderful to see you.
Yes, I come up here every few weeks whether you want me or not. I wander around Central Avenue and they see if they drag
That's
me.
That's right. They say, is that Vinny the Chin Gigante? Nope. It's Ira. He's doing the show this week.
You got the guys who are always standing out front here in front of the little shop next door, and sometimes I'm picked and sometimes one of these other guys.
Well, they got a sign in front of their store saying no smoking in front of this store.
Oh, I don't smoke. I loiter.
So then they come right over here.
Yeah. Yeah, and there they are. And first of all, thank you for being here. Second of all, don't wander around Central Avenue.
I won't. And I want your listeners to know that Joe appeared in my market at the Woodstock Film Festival, and my favorite newspaper ran his picture on the front page 2 days in a row for various reasons, and in each in each caption, he was misidentified.
Really?
I was either...
He was James Donahue James in the Donahue. First, and then the second time, Donahue was misspelled.
Oh, well. Close enough.
So the good news is we own up to it. The bad news is it happened to begin with.
Well, who cares?
But it can be very humbling when a person... You know, it's like if... I don't know. Tom Brokaw showed up, and he thinks everybody knows who, and we made him Tim Brokaw.
Well, you know what was great about that is that you pointed that out to me because I didn't notice it when I read it.
Well,
he was just looking at his picture going, I look fat in this.
Exactly.
When I was doing publishing full-time, I was known as being something of a micromanager, so I'll see things that a lot of the other people won't see.
Well, that's what makes you a good... Did you mumble?
No,
he's
no,
thoroughly.
But I'm very interested in this because you know, at one time, many years ago, I published a newspaper, the Fire Island Sun, the alternative newspaper out there, and what ended up happening was that one day I went to a party and I was the publisher, not the editor, and this lady Sarah, let's just call her Sarah, came up to me and started screaming at me that I had left her garden party out of the newspaper, and who did I think I was during that time. I was the publisher. The editor whose house this party was at was the guy who made the mistake, but he was not touchable.
No.
I'm still thinking about that and Mrs. Blofeld and a lot of other things.
Well, you know what I thought you were going to say is...
It's an all-baggage edition of the Roundtable today.
You know, Alan has been in this market for a long time and is...
Very long time.
You know,
not
and
that
it's,
long.
And
long,
it's,
long
and,
time.
But,
so long.
But I'm always surprised that they'll either spell Alan with two L's and Chartok with an S, and sometimes it's Chartoff.
Yeah. Or Chartok without the second C.
Make it up as you go
along.
You
see that a lot. And I'm just like, my God, you know, the guy was on TV for so many years. You think you would know how to spell it, but whatever.
Kids.
Yes, that's right. Kids. Well, for the past 3 weeks, we've been talking about a shutdown and a looming shutdown and then an actual shutdown. And then, oh, my God, yesterday it ended. Thank goodness.
For now.
At least until February. The headline, and we can begin here, the headline in the New York Times this morning is Republicans back down, ending crisis over shutdown and the debt limit. How much did the Republicans have to back down, Alan?
Hey, nice editorial on the front page, you know, in the New York
That's
Times.
Why I brought it up.
Back down. Nice editorial, don't you think? And then, of course, these news programs all have to come up with something that is tangential to the whole issue. So I saw on NBC not that long ago, they had to bring in a tipster. You know, now you get all the tipsters. Seven tips for negotiating. The tipsters. I used to know a guy, Bill Duffy, in this market, and every time it would be the local news would say, "Here's how to prepare your car for the bad weather," and he would yell out, "Weather tips!" So now you get all this stuff. So what are you going to talk about the next day? It is true. The reality is the Republicans lost big time. And do you say that, or do you try to be more balanced?
I was very surprised to see that headline in the Times today. We can all argue that it's accurate, but nevertheless, it was interpretive, and that seemed unusual for the Times, particularly on the front page. And we all know how rare it is for the Times to run a headline across the front of the page. So, but I think more importantly, because we could leave that to the media show, which we just did, and we talked about this a little bit, was what this all means now, because we're going to be sitting here in 3 months talking about this again, aren't we?
That means the stock market is going up 150 more points today. That's what it means.
And does it mean that that Ted Cruz and the Tea Party folks, as a result of this vote, have been chastened and never to be heard from again?
No. But they're going to be heard from, but they're going to be heard with a lot less respect than they were heard, as if they were effective. And I, by the way, don't think we're going to be back in the same soup. I think it would be so incredibly stupid for the Republicans to try this again.
We said the last time.
No, I understand it. But I think that Boehner is now, you know, I mean, I'm just in love with thinking about Boehner. Here's why. This guy, no, really.
Almost did a Danny Thomas spit take there.
This guy.
It's one of my favorite ballads from that Broadway show.
Why is he doing so much for the Tea Party people? Why isn't he talking to the majority of his party? Tea Party. He knew all along he was giving it up on the last day.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think he allegedly got a standing ovation from his caucus at the last meeting. And the feeling is that he knew he could go along with them, and he was only going to go so far. So it looked like he was backing them up all this time. And then at the end, when the odds were, you know, he didn't want to take us over the cliff. So he let the vote come out. But
So it seems as though the big surprise is that he stood with them, but perhaps that he stood with them for as long as he did. In the sense,
I agree that it took as long as it did. No, I agree with that, because he was able to paint the Republican Party as a result of that, Joe, in such a bad way, his own party, that all the polls kept going down and down and down for him. I'm going to tell you the thing that is most interesting to me is what are the political ramifications of this. In other words, will people remember for a year how they behaved here?
I was just going to ask you this. So there were 100 in the House, 144 votes to approve the Senate plan. 87 House Republicans voted to support it. So where are they politically versus those who voted against
it? You know, you have asked the classic and most important question in all of this. Because we do know that the people who vote in general elections are very different than the people who vote in primaries.
Right.
You know, you get a 15%, 10% turnout in a primary, in a Republican primary, you know that they're going to be the most vitriolic right wing of the party. That means you could lose your seat to anybody who tries to out-conservative you. Whereas in a general election, you could lose because people say you behaved irresponsibly and caved in to the fringe. That seems to me to be the whole issue here that each of these people has to decide.
Two things jump out at me because there's been so much talk about this, the chattering class and the cable, and it's just you get bombarded and all of the points have been made and remade. But two things jump out at me. One is the impact of gerrymandering and redistricting has never been more significant in politics. And it extends and, in fact, starts at the state level. And we see the impact negatively, in my opinion, in New York State by the way the legislative lines have been drawn. So these guys, many of them are bulletproof. And you do have primaries where it's not the rush to the middle, it's the rush to the fringe. And that's, I think, disquieting and suggests to me that it is going to happen again in 3 months, that the 20 some odd percent of the people in this country who believe the Tea Party is worth following is going to still be catered to. And with the hopes among the leadership of that group that their numbers will continue to expand as they hammer their message along.
Well, a couple of things. One, I think you err.
I think yes. Actually, I rub, but you can say
I think, I think you when you talk about how it's so obvious in New York State. I don't think it is. The Republicans have basically run out of members to reapportion, of position to reapportion. The only reason they're still in control in the Senate is because Andrew Cuomo allowed them to be, and because there were four. And I say this, I hope nobody takes this the wrong way. traitors, Democratic traitors, who decided to go over to the Republican side to keep them in control.
But the books were cooked initially by the way they redistricted.
Without question.
If you're saying that the demographics within those districts are now changing and New York State is becoming so blue,
but
that's different than what I'm. You know, somebody's going to try to adjust to that.
You picked the wrong state. Okay. It's only because you're sitting in New York that you
picked
this state.
Well, I can tell from
the Texas model is the one. They reapportioned in the middle of the term when they usually don't do it. And basically, they rubbed out almost every Democratic congressman in Texas just by the way they drew the lines. And to your point, those people who are now in safe red districts have to really worry about being out conservative by the people who might run against them in a
Texas.
Primary. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back to this topic and talk about other ramifications. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Ray, Ira, Joe, We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work working to prepare students with the knowledge and skills to serve diverse populations in their communities. Adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Local apples, pumpkins, squash, fresh meats and seafood, and Adams Grown Mums. AdamsFarms.com. Truppiano Uniforms, Kingston, New York. Uniforms and shoes for medical, dental, and veterinary healthcare professionals and more. We care for the people who take care of others. At the store or online, uniformsuniforms.com. And the Olana Partnership and Olana State Historic Site, presenting Maine's sublime Frederick Church's landscapes of Mountain Desert and Mount Katahdin through October 27th. Olana.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome you to join us, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Hey, Joe, do you know that Ira just said something which I was fascinated by, which I did not know, about an article he read? Can you tell us?
Oh, this is not a new article, but it was in New York Magazine, I believe 2 weeks ago, an interview with Justice Scalia of the United States Supreme Court.
Which was one of the most fascinating articles I've read in a really long time.
Yeah, and he said, among other interesting things, that he only reads the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times, two very conservative newspapers. He does not read the Washington Post. He thinks it's too liberal. He scoffs at the New York Times. And on the one hand, we can say, well, that's not surprising. People who are conservatives or liberals will gravitate to the media that they are most aligned with. But I just found it fascinating that this is a United States Supreme Court justice who I would like to think has the ability to absorb all sorts of ideas and then separate them for what they are. And if he is not even reading the other newspapers that he deems liberal, and certainly the New York Times editorial page is liberal. I wouldn't necessarily say all of their coverage is liberal.
Albeit boring.
But it took me aback, as they say.
Who cares?
He said the Washington Post.
Who cares about?
I mean, who cares?
What do you mean? He's sitting up there in the top court, Ray, in the United States, making political decisions every day, and he's uninformed.
Well, the only thing that's questionable is whether he should have said it in print. But, I mean, as long as he knows how to read the Constitution, then he can do his job.
Boy, I just like to think that our judges at all levels of government are more well-rounded in the information that they absorb.
So they have to read the Post? Well-rounded? How about USA Today? Should he read that as well?
I suspect he's more likely to read the Post than USA Today.
Well, he should read it all.
He shouldn't have to read the Constitution.
This is sort of a know-nothing attitude.
I'm sorry, it's not. The Constitution is the thing.
He argued that the Washington Post is slanted and often nasty. He, in a quote, said, "I read newspapers that I think are good newspapers, or if they're not good, at least they don't make me angry." He later said that he's suspicious of social media. He cannot remember the last party he attended that included substantial members of both conservatives and liberals. And he said, "I have friends who I know, or at least I suspect, are homosexual, but I don't want to know more than that."
It was a candid. We got to give him credit for being candid. I just
Makes
thought it
me
was interesting.
Him and, even more. Yeah.
Why did he do it? That's the question. That's my question.
He opened
why,
up.
Why bother?
Ego and arrogance.
Can I tell you the other takeaway I had from the shutdown? One that I know.
Oh, yes. Let's get back to that.
Fried shrimp.
And I know you will have not heard this analogy made anywhere. I guarantee you this is the first time, probably the last.
Okay.
Do you? I think Joe is likely to know the movie A Guide for a Married Man.
Yes, I do know.
A Guide for a Married Man was a movie that was made in the late 60s. It was a sex farce, way mild by comparison to today's standards. Featured a whole array of big name stars, Walter Matthau, and in cameo roles, people
Gene Kelly directed the film.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you had Lucille Ball and Jack Benny, and those, we're talking about mainstream.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not going to get into the whole plot, but in one part
there wasn't a lot of plot.
Yeah, well, in one of the vignettes that they show, a skit as part of this movie, a wife walks into the bedroom and finds her husband in bed with another woman.
In delecti.
And she says, in effect, how could you do this? How could you do this? And as she's saying that over and over again, the husband and the mistress get out of bed, get dressed, she leaves, he makes the bed. He keeps saying, what? What woman? What? Sits down in an easy chair, and the scene ends with him reading the newspaper and the wife befuddled, thinking, gee, I must have made this up. I didn't see it because he's been denied. And the theme to the piece was the phrase, deny, deny, deny. Oh. And I keep thinking of that when I hear so many of the Republicans come to the microphone and say, for example, as Ted Cruz did after the recent poll showing that
we won,
or that the polls that were showing us as low as we've ever been is that the polls are not right or they're skewed, or Michelle Bachmann showing up at the memorial with all of the veterans and blaming the shutdown of the memorial on Obama. It boggles the mind, and I don't know that Ray is going to jump in and say, oh, what was wrong with that? But it follows up Bill Maher's Republicans living in the bubble. They have their own message, and they're sending that message out to themselves, and they're talking to each other and reinforcing it. And when I just listened to this the aftermath of the shutdown. Deny, deny, deny.
You know, you're great at synthesizing things because that brings Scalia
yes.
right back.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking because he's only talking to the preaching to the choir. Now, will you confirm that we will not hear the
confirm?
Reference no. to Guide for a Married Man and any no. other political
Can
show?
Can you reference Skidoo? I didn't. Jackie Gleason and Groucho Marx?
Sid and Marty Croft. Let's take a break, and we'll come up with more obscure references and much more. We welcome, or not, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. It's next on the Roundtable. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's continue on this subject of the end of the shutdown for a moment. We got off on some other topics, which, of course, we planned to
do. We sure did.
It was all part of what we were going to talk about.
Off the rails.
So the president says, we've got to get out of the habit of governing by crisis. And was very quick in the same sentence, urging Congress to proceed not only with new budget negotiations, but with immigration changes and a farm bill as well. A reminder, certainly, to the American people that we are not done when it comes to controversial topics and things and issues that we have to discuss. So, Alan, I'll begin with you as far as how the president comes out in all of this. And do you think that this... impasse will have any effect on those other issues, which are huge, a farm bill and the immigration.
Well, it turns out that the president knew what he was doing in all of this and has come out, which I think everybody knows, as better than he had really any right to expect when he went into it. But he really stayed with it. He gets an A for what he did. And now he immediately raises these other issues, trying to capitalize on what he's got going. Now, the immigration thing was a disaster for the Republican Party in the last presidential election, which is not exactly a congressional election, but we knew that. They did very well with Hispanics, the Democrats did. The Republicans, this is no news to the Republicans, started to lick their wounds and say, we have to come up with something, too. So there are a lot of very conservative forces in this country who truly want an immigration bill. They want it for a lot of reasons. I understand even the Koch brothers have made those kinds of noises. So this isn't going to be the kind of touch football that we just saw in the Congress. There's a possibility you could have an Immigration Act. And if you don't, you've handed the issue back to the Democrats one more time. Same thing with women's rights or some of the other things that the farm bill. Every farmer in America needs that farm bill right now. The big issue, of course, you don't hear about it a lot, is that agribusiness, the big Midwestern thousands of acres farmers are the ones who are being protected, as you know, by many of the Republicans, not the family farmers that we have around here, even though many of those farmers are themselves Republicans. So sometimes you play for the issue. Sometimes you play because you really want to get it done.
I think Obama is shooting high. He's got a couple of issues that he wants to get settled in his favor to help not only those who it will help, but also to help build his legacy. But I think it's going to be virtually impossible for him to get anything done until the next Congress is seated. And so I believe he's trying to position himself and by extension, the Republican Party in such a way that the Republicans will lose seats in the Congress in 2014. He will then have a Democratic Congress, a Democratic Senate, and he will then be able to push through all sorts of legislation in his final 2 years and go out in a blaze of glory. In the meantime, I think that the Ted Cruz faction, the Marco Rubios and the Rand Pauls are going to continue on in the direction that they're going because they want to run for president and they're trying to establish their names and their brands. And therein lies the dichotomy.
Lindsey Graham quoted saying, if you look back in time and evaluate the last couple of weeks, it should be titled The Time of Great Lost Opportunity. It has been the best 2 weeks for the Democratic Party in recent times because they were out of the spotlight and didn't have to showcase their ideas. This is followed by a quote from Senator John McCain, who said, well, someone would have to explain that to me. I knew how this was going to end all along.
And said so, by the way.
Yes, he did.
And
yes,
you know, he did. And you know something else? He looks better than he has in
well, we're seeing the McCain that people liked before he ran for president.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And even Lindsey Graham, who I could. You know, I always had issues with.
He always looks like the mascot.
He's looking better right now. So those people who really were better at playing the game are looking better. And I only can say about Ted Cruz. Do you really think he has a shot at running for president?
I was just going to say that it seems to me that more so than at any time, certainly since Ross Perot, that we're going to see three parties in the race this year. Mm. That the split in the Republican Party is so deep and the issues are so divisive between them intramurally that they're going to split their brand. And the Tea Party people are, as I said earlier, are going to hope that they can incrementally, add on supporters. And then the other question will be who would run for the Democrats. And many people would say Hillary will win in a breeze, but other people will say Hillary is equally as divisive to a large portion of the country. So I just look for this to be a three-way race. And to your point, I think Ted Cruz is going to run for president or vice president, and either Rand Paul or Marco Rubio are going to top his ticket.
Don't you think the Democrats are all around on their hands and knees?
I think so.
Please,
dear
do.
God, yes. Let this happen.
I think you're right. And the statistics, you know, there was a great poll that NBC had the other night that showed, and the numbers are maybe not specific but close, that roughly 53% of this country considers itself in the middle. And that there's the 21% that are far right, and there was about 26% that were far left. And the point of the poll was that most Americans do want the country to come together and to compromise and understand that there are varying and extreme points of view, but that the country and the government cannot run well unless it compromises. And as long as the extremes are only talking to the extremes, they're going to be turning off the majority of the country.
But politics is a zero-sum game. You get one winner and one loser. So that while you're right about where the American people are, mm-hmm. it seems to me that the thing here is how each of those parties in that zero-sum game can play to that middle mm-hmm. and try to pick them off as potential voters. Mm-hmm. I've always thought, by the way, that the middle class aspires to be rich. And so, therefore, they want to be like the Republicans. They do not want to be poor. And so, therefore, you will never hear in contemporary politics people talking about, or seldom hear about people talking about being poor, because it doesn't get you any votes.
And it's how you classify yourself. And so the poll that says 53% of America considers themselves centrist, you know, a right winger might say, "Hey, my values are central." Sure. A hard left person might say, "Well, I consider myself in the middle." Really, does it really matter? I mean, when you come to vote, you're going to vote how you vote. I mean, you could say you're into the center, but really, most of you people will think, "Oh, he's hard right. He's hard left."
But it matters, in terms of strategy. It matters in terms of electability, of winning the group.
The group is really amorphous.
Well, it is, except for what the perception is everything. They consider themselves middle. And if you appeal to that middle and to those values, you have a better chance of winning a majority and then acting out as both parties tend to do.
Okay.
So let us make a slight shift here, and because I want to move on to another issue, and that is Cory Booker.
I don't have a movie to analogize that.
It's a mad world.
We've been talking about potential candidates for 2016, yes. Cory Booker certainly is somebody whose name has been bandied about. In the special election yesterday, won in the state of New Jersey. What should we look at his political star? How should we look at that?
I was going to ask a different question, which was he won fairly handily, and he's a Democrat, and Chris Christie is wildly popular and is likely to win overwhelmingly, and he's a Republican. What does that say about the state of New Jersey and or Booker? From a political standpoint, is it just that New Jersey is able to not take a wide, not is able to divorce itself from the extremes and is judging people? Because Lonergan, the opponent, was certainly an extreme right candidate.
She was.
He was.
I think this is a very interesting election. I'm struck by the fact that Chris Christie got away with having this special election a couple of weeks before his own election and cost the people of New Jersey $23 million, apparently. That's, if I'm sitting there, I'm scratching my head and say, what's all about? But apparently, there doesn't seem to be a lot of recrimination.
Well, there was a lot of yelling at the beginning, and then it disappeared. But, to Joe's question, I think Booker certainly has been positioned to a large extent by himself, because he's very media very media conscious, as a progressive, a guy who gets things done, a guy who runs in and pulls people out of burning buildings. And he was a bright
guy. Didn't he have something to do with strippers also?
Well, near the end of the campaign, he got involved with a tweeting issue, but it was by no means an Anthony Weiner tweeting issue. And beyond that, he happens to be a single man, so it wasn't a question of him tweeting with women when he was already married. So
And it was a vegan strip club. So
then he lost my support right there. You go to a hamburger strip club, I'm there.
Well, you see.
Yeah, but
that plays to the voters.
Absolutely.
I think interesting in this, though, is that Lonergan, very conservative, American for Prosperity, got 44% in a very blue state. That maybe says, well, maybe conservatism not dead.
New Jersey is a split state. Isn't it?
It's called a blue state. I think it went for Obama, but nevertheless, it's got Governor Christie.
He's hardly a
well.
A
New York had Governor
Republican.
Pataki, and Massachusetts had a series of Republican governors.
Sure.
Yeah.
Real quick, we're going to take a break. I just want to get to these comments. Ray, your comment that the Constitution is all that matters ignores the fact that all of us, most poignantly, the Supreme Court justices are affected by what we encounter and read. I agree with Joe that they should read both perspectives and then make an informed decision, which I think was Ira's point, actually. Otherwise, it's coming to the bench with a biased, uninformed opinion. Don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind opinion. If what we read is not important, we needn't have schools, teachers, and education in America. We can just implement religious...
disagree with all of that.
And start cultivating only biased information based on Fox News' style.
Well, good for that person.
That's David.
That's an overhanded argument, and I reject it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then Suzanne writes, Scalia does like flattering attention, but Ira, I was also shocked. One can fairly conclude that Justice Scalia is not particularly aware of the life experiences of ordinary individuals who will be affected by decisions from the court. Confirmation bias, where one only pays attention to the opinions and information that confirm our own views, is especially assiduous when it resides in the daily habit psychological construct of a justice.
Hey, I get the credit.
Fine.
For raising the issue.
That's right. We weren't going to go to that.
Yes, we were.
You had said in break.
I wanted to save it for the media show.
And I interjected that.
Once again, we know why we pay you the big bucks.
Alan Shartok, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be here all week.
And the answer to the movie question, it will be Mr. Booker Goes to Washington.
Yeah, Mr. Booker Goes to Washington.
There you go.
Let's take a break, and we'll come up with other great stuff. And
will we?
Yeah. Well, yes. We'll talk about things, and then Alan will bring it up. And then
he'll take credit for it.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from UMass Amherst Museum of Contemporary Art, presenting the exhibition Du Bois in Our Time. 10 artists explore the legacy of W.E.B. Du Bois 50 years after his death. umass.edu/UMCA. Vince Torres Hudson Valley Piano Center, Poughkeepsie, featuring Yamaha's Avant-Grand Hybrid and Clavinova digital pianos that combine acoustic and digital technology. VinceTorPiano.com. INOC, Albany, New York, serving the Northeast since 2000 with data center and related ISP and network services. INOC.net. And McCabe & Mack, Attorneys at Law, Poughkeepsie, New York, representing clients throughout the Hudson Valley for wills, trusts, estates, and elder law. MCCM.com.
Welcome back to the
Roundtable.
I was going to say the Hall of Fame edition of the Roundtable. Yes, we want to talk about. We just have about 7 or 8 minutes, and I wanted to talk about an issue that I know is important to everyone in this room.
Certainly to me,
and that is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced their 2014 nominees, which I don't quite understand why they do this whole nomination thing. As opposed to just
publicity, my boy.
You get attention.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you know
it's now open to public ballot.
Yeah.
Is it really?
People can vote. Yeah. Voting will be open to fans through December 10th.
Oh, I didn't realize.
But,
that.
But it's a weighted vote. Yeah. I mean, it's not like they
still the 600 plus members
of the of
whatever
the Hall
it is.
Of Fame.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have Nirvana.
Right.
Kiss. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Hall and Oates.
Okay.
The Replacements, The Meters, Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah.
NWA. the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, Deep Purple, Peter Gabriel. Peter Gabriel is in for Genesis.
Right.
This would be for his solo work. LL Cool J. Cat Stevens, Link Wray, Yes, and The Zombies.
Yes, and you missed one, Chic.
Yeah.
And Chic. I apologize. Yes, and Chic. So, Ray, what do you think?
I think a lot of things that I can't say. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has so many that are not purveyors of rock and roll.
So, for example, my all-time idol Pete Seeger is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
All right, well, that's one. But, I mean, you know, I love Miles Davis. I love Billie Holiday. Yeah. I play them. I love them. That's not rock and roll. Chic. They had two disco hits. That's not rock and roll. And they're up for nomination.
It's the same thing with LL Cool J and the inclusion of rap. And what I find interesting, with the exception of Willie Nelson, a complete disregard for country music.
Right.
Well, there is a Country Hall of Fame, but Ray said exactly what I was going to say.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, if it is Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, then they seem to be going out, although the one genre that they do miss is country. Which I find
Look, if it's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and let's use the Beatles as a line of demarcation, the candidates for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should have been people who performed roughly from 1950 to 1963. And anybody beyond that is no longer rock and roll.
Well, but if you were writing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, why in the world would you cut your?
Exactly. But I think what we have is a misnomer. The building is.
Rock and roll is what you think of.
Is
it.
Pete Seeger
like,
rock
it's
and
like
roll?
The Almighty.
Pete Seeger would not even plug a guitar in.
He wrote "Turn, Turn, Turn."
The argument. The argument, of course, is the influence that he had over rock and roll
and Miles Davis as well. But I still don't get it. In other words, and I would go further than Ira. I would put it at least into the early 90s for rock and roll. But I see your point. But the point is, some of this is not rock and roll. It's just not. I mean, Chic. All right, let's go through rock and roll hits that we can remember. Stairway to Heaven, Smoke on the Water, Can't Get No Satisfaction, Freak Out. Which of these do not belong? You know.
Well, and you say, and the Hall of Fame made this case when they put out the list of talking about Kiss, and they said okay, no other band other than the Beatles was responsible for kids picking up a guitar as much as Kiss. I don't know if I buy that. However, at least you can make the argument for Kiss.
They always scared me,
and I don't like them, but they should be in. They were big.
Gene Simmons is a lovely man.
Yeah. During the fun drive, Joe had to leave. I had to sit down with Sarah for a few moments because Joe had an interview with Gene Simmons, leader and bass player in Kiss, and he was not all that friendly. Twice.
Yeah, no, he hung up.
He did.
Yeah, he hung up.
Did you hold your earphone away from the microphone in case his tongue came through?
What did you say to get him to hang up?
I think it was. We were having some technical difficulties because of the fun drive. We were trying to get the lines done, and he wasn't being patient, and he just said, "Forget it," and moved on. But a lovely man.
But
to
get back to this weighty subject, the what's interesting about it is that we're feeding right into the promotion,
yeah.
Which is they put out these lists and we're sitting here arguing about it. And at the end of the day, who the heck cares who gets in or doesn't get in? I feel, even as strongly as I feel about the Baseball Hall of Fame, part of the notion of that of a Hall of Fame is the discussion and the talking about baseball or talking about music, and at the end of the day, nobody gets hurt.
I will say that the Baseball Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame, there seems to be a certainly in the Baseball Hall of Fame, there seems to be a process which is revered.
No, but it's desperately flawed, though.
Yes, I agree with
flawed.
You.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. But certainly the criteria here has come under fire for a long, long time since its inception, because it's basically Jan Wenner and of Rolling Stone magazine and putting the money in and how these votes come.
Well, so by extension, a promotion for Rolling Stone magazine.
Right.
Yeah.
So rock journalists are part of the 600.
Yes.
And
artists themselves, right?
Right.
Last year's class include Rush, Randy Newman, Public Enemy, Donna Summer, and Quincy Jones.
Well, I mean, look at it now. Warren Zevon, never even nominated. How can that be? Cheap Trick, never even nominated.
Moody Blues, right?
Right. Never even nominated.
ELO.
And yet you got James Brown's backup band by themselves, the famous Flames. They're in.
Yeah. It took Elton John to bring Leon Russell back into the spotlight to get this guy in the Hall of Fame. I happen to be a big Leon Russell fan. If you look at his biography and all of the people he played with as backups, starting with literally the beginning of rock and roll, and this guy was not elected on his own merits until Elton John. I mean, I don't know why. If it's politics or he was overlooked. But again, these things are just terribly flawed, and they make for good discussion. Yeah. And if you go to Cleveland, you've got some place to go if you want to, you know, go to a museum.
I was there the other day.
Were you?
In the airport.
Oh, did you go?
No.
Did you pay homage at Seeger's Shrine in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, but I want to know whether...
Where have all the flowers gone? They're over at Seeger's Shrine.
Are Earl Scruggs and Lester Flatt in? Yeah.
They might. You know what?
You know, I think they are.
They deserve to be.
Yeah. I mean, I'd much rather it be called the Pop Music Hall
or the American Music Hall of Fame and throw John Coltrane in and everybody else, you know.
Well, you guys are old and you're purists.
I'm old. I don't know about it being.
Well, Ray's old.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Now, older.
Not as old as
Joe's
you.
Well, nobody's as old as I am.
True.
Yeah, Ray, what, you have 2 years on me?
Something like that.
Yeah. So.
Well, we've ground to a halt.
Let's
end the show.
I was going to say, what are we doing for the next 3 minutes?
Yeah. Goodbye, everybody. We're done.
Well, we could talk about movies.
Yeah.
Yes, guilty pleasure movie.
Ira wants to tell us a story about a movie from 1968.
Is there a measurement, you know, like
that? By Sidney Reese.
I was watching Prudence and the Pill the other day.
I want to know, you know how on Amazon, like a guy comes on a program like yours and he'll be plugging his book, and you can look at Amazon immediately to see if the number has risen. Can we check with, say, Netflix to see if people are rushing to rent A Guide for a Married Man now?
Yeah.
I should have put it in earlier and see what the number was.
I really
beforehand.
Do recommend it. It's a fascinating picture.
On that note, we are out of time. I want to thank our
Walter Matthau and Robert Morse. People who watch Mad Men will be surprised to see the young Robert Morse.
Has succeeded in business.
Yeah, but he was in The Guide for a Married Man.
He's so great in Mad Men. Yep. And he's great in that too. The Roundtable WAMC.
You don't say.
You can also reach us on our webpage or Facebook or tweet at WAMC Roundtable. Gentlemen, a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Will I ever be invited again?
I think so. Maybe, sure.
You erred by having me on.
Judy Patrick will join us tomorrow. We're excited about that. So
we like her.
We'll continue with our roundtable after this short break.